Good evening. Sorry, Donald. This evening, we're going to be studying 1 Samuel chapters 13 and 14. I can't tell you how many times I looked at the schedule thinking, is it really 13 and 14 or 12 and 13 or 14 and 15? So David may be going, no, you're off. But we're going to study chapters 13 and 14 tonight. I like the way Corey LaBeouf did it. I don't know if he's in here or not. Well, I mean, you were behind Ara, and all I saw was hair, so I didn't think that was you. I like the way that Corey did his class, where he ran through the two chapters quickly and then went and got into some of the other details. And I'll be honest with you, the first rabbit trail I went down, I spent most of the time on. And we're going to spend quite a bit of time on it. And hopefully it will, if nothing else, bring something to light that you're not familiar with. I didn't realize there was as much controversy as there was in this, but anyway, we'll get to that in a second. So we're going to quickly go through the first two chapters, and you'll see on the, there it goes. All right, at age 30, Saul begins his reign of 42 years. Saul forms an army of 3,000 men, keeping 2,000 with himself, placing 1,000 with his son Jonathan, and sends the rest home. Jonathan attacks a Philistine garrison at Geba. Saul blew a trumpet, let the Hebrew hear. Israel became repulsive to the Philistines. Saul summoned the people to Gilgal, provoking a massive Philistine retaliation at Michmash. 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen. People were like the sand on the seashore. Men of Israel hid themselves. Verse 7, terrified Saul's men dwindled at Gilgal. Verse 8, Saul waits 7 days for Samuel at Gilgal as instructed, as his scared men scatter. 9 through 13, growing impatient as his men scatter, Saul offers the burnt offering himself. Samuel arrives and rebukes Saul for his disobedience. Samuel declares that Saul's kingdom will not endure and God will seek a man after his own heart to be ruler. Verse 15, Samuel departs for Gibeah of Benjamin. Saul has 600 men at Gilgal. Israel at Gibeah of Benjamin, while Philistines at Michmash. 17 and 18, three Philistine raiding parties. No Israel blacksmith, no sword nor spears. Tools of Israel sharpened by Philistines. Only Saul and Jonathan had swords and spears. The garrison of the Philistines at Michmash. And garrison is a group of soldiers. Chapter 14, Jonathan is an armor bearer, not telling Saul, sneak across to the Philistine garrison. Saul is at outskirts of Gibeah with 600 men. Ahijah was wearing an ephod. No one knew that Jonathan was gone. Verses 4 through 8, rocky crags on both sides. Jonathan and his armor bearer agree to go. If they say, wait, we will stand. If they say, come up, we will go. Philistines said, come up, and Jonathan and said, the Lord has handed them over to Israel. Jonathan and his armor bearer killed 20 men in about a half furrow in an acre of land. Philistines trembled. Saul's watchmen saw Philistines scatter. Saul found out that Jonathan and his armor bearer were not in camp. Saul requests the Ark of God. Philistine commotion increases. Philistines were fighting Philistines, Hebrews now fighting with Israel. Hiding men of Israel came out to fight. Verse 23, the Lord saved Israel that day. Men of Israel were hard-pressed. Saul put warriors under a no-eat oath. Israel entered the forest with honey on the ground and no one ate. Jonathan, not knowing of the oath, ate the honey and his eyes brightened. Jonathan was informed of his father's curse. Jonathan states, my father has troubled the land, my eyes brighten. Israel attacked the Philistines from Michmash to Ajana and were very tired. Israel ate the spoils, including the blood. Saul said, you have acted treacherously. All brought their offerings to Saul first, to Saul's first altar to the Lord. Saul wants to plunder the Philistines, but the priest said, let's approach God here. Saul inquired of God, but he did not answer on that day. So Saul investigates the sin. Verse 39, even if it's my own son, he shall surely die. And the people were silent. Paul separated himself from Jonathan, from the people, and the lot fell on Jonathan. Jonathan said, I must die. Saul said, may God do the same to me. The people stated, must Jonathan die? The people rescued Jonathan. Israel and the Philistines went home. Saul inflicted punishment over all his enemies on every side. Saul acted valiantly and saved Israel. Saul's children, sons, Jonathan, Ishi, Malchishua, daughters were Merib and Michal. Son's wife was Ahinom. Saul's father was Kish, and war with the Philistines was severe all the days of Saul. So that's chapters 13 and 14. We did that in about 6 minutes. So we've got to find 34 minutes worth of material to talk about. The very first verse that I came to is the rabbit trail that I ran down. So the New American Standard says Saul was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 42 years over Israel. Does anybody else have any other readings?
And reigned 32 years.
He was 40 and reigned 32 years.
Where are you reading from?
The 95, I thought.
From the 75, it has the 40 and 30 swapped.
Were you even alive then, Wyatt? It's 75? No. Anybody else has a different translation? Yes, ma'am. Jenny?
The King James Version says Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, and then goes into verse 2.
Okay. Yes, sir.
A little curious one here. Young is the literal translation. And it says, a son of a year is Saul in his reign. Yea, 2 years he has reigned over Israel.
So when I went to my compare the verses, that's the one that one of those that I omitted, just because it was out there. Okay. ASV, Saul was 40 years old when he began to reign and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel. ESV, Saul lived for 1 year and then became king, and he had reigned for 2 years over Israel. Saul was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he ruled for 42 years over Israel. King James Version, Saul reigned 1 year and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel. Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 more years over Israel. Is there anybody else besides me that didn't realize all the discrepancies between the translations on that? So we're going to spend some time on this. Oh, did I miss one? Oh, that was it. Saul was 30 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 42 years. Okay. So Acts 13:21 says, then they asked for a king. God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. So if you look at all those, how does that fit in? And let me first say, we have the perfect will of God recorded. This is not an issue of somebody's salvation. This is just and. There are guys that got into stuff I couldn't even comprehend what they were saying when they started describing the different variations in some of this. So I went to the Cliff Note versions of many of them to share with y'all. But we do see in Acts that God tells us 40 years. Okay? So I don't know any of these people we're quoting. I know they're accurate because they are online. So it says, James B. Jordan says, 1 Samuel 13:1 literally says, a son of 1 year was Saul when he became king, and 2 years he reigned over Israel. There are two obvious problems with this verse. First, how could Saul become king when he was 1 year old, and especially since he obviously was much older? Second, how can it be said that Saul only reigned 2 years when he clearly reigned for many more, including the whole time David was in exile? The actual number of years Saul reigned was 40, according to the inspired saying of Paul in 13:21 Acts. And then they asked for a king. God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. This verse settles the larger chronological question, but it forces us to consider, again, what to do with 1 Samuel 13:1. One solution, which we find in the New International Version, is to assume that 1 Samuel 13:1 has become corrupted in transmission. A few late manuscripts of the Septuagint, that's the Greek translation of the Old Testament, read that Saul was 30 years old when he began to reign. So that is how the NIV renders the first half of the verse. Then taking Acts 13:21 into account, the NIV assumes that a number had dropped out of the second half of 1 Samuel 13:1. So it should read, and 42 years he reigned over Israel. The NIV footnote explains that the translators have assumed that Acts 13:21 is giving a round number when it only says he reigned 40 years. If, however, there is no way to interpret 1 Samuel 13:1 without changing it, we should do so. Besides, Saul must have been older than 30 at this time because he had a grown son, Jonathan, who was old enough to serve in the army with him. Saul was probably about 40 when he began to reign. Reigned 40 years and died about 80 years of age. So we're going to spend some time on that. There are a lot of people that believe Saul was 15 and Jonathan was 15. It's 30 years later when this occurred. I don't see how that works, but anyway, just interesting. Martin Anstey points to a better interpretation, but missed the mark. With many other older commentators, he states that Saul's two-year reign only covers the time when he legitimately ruled Israel. For the remainder of his days, he says, are years of the unrecognized and illegitimate tyranny of Saul, the usurper of David's throne and the rejected of the Lord's. The problem with this interpretation is that David was not yet anointed, so Saul could not be usurping David's throne. In fact, David would not be born for 8 more years. Also, David never regarded Saul's reign as an illegitimate usurp of his throne. In fact, David went out of his way to accord Saul respect as the Lord's anointed and Israel's proper ruler. The first half of the verse maintains should not be translated a son of 1 year was Saul when he began to reign, but rather a son of 1 year was Saul in his reigning. In other words, 1 Samuel 13:1 means that Saul had already reigned 1 year and has only 2 more legitimate years to reign. This is how the translators of the original and New King James Version interprets the clause, for they rendered it. Saul reigned 1 year. Okay, just your thoughts on that. Anybody have any ideas that you would like to share? Yes, sir.
No idea if this factors into it at all, but I know when studying Noah's Ark and the amount of time that the Bible talks about how they were on the ark, the way that they used years, I know, was referring to the Hebrew calendar and how it's something like 11 days, or it's pretty close to ours, but it's slightly off as far as how long a year would be. I have no idea if they'd be referring to that in this passage, and maybe Paul's referring to a different one. I mean, it seems pretty clear cut as far as like however many years, but I don't know, is the way that Samuel is using that word the same as Luke would in Acts.
Okay. You know, when you think about, go ahead, Ed.
Just not really an idea as much as a couple of observations. One is that even the so-called literal translations don't agree with each other. I told you Young's literal translation. This comes from the literal translation of the Bible, the LITV. It says, it was 1 year since Saul became king. Then he reigned 2 more years over Israel. So even the literals don't agree as to what the literal translation is in English. And another observation is with counting of years, years and days, the counting of anything, one method of counting does not equal everybody's method of counting. And so you mentioned rounding years. Sometimes the first year isn't counted. Sometimes the last year isn't counted in the totality of years. Even the time that from the death of Jesus on the cross to the time of his resurrection, there are arguments about whether it was 1 day or 2 days or 3 days. He was crucified on the first day and buried, and he stayed in the grave the second day, and he arose the third day, but very early that day. So, was it 3 days? Different people count those things different ways. They have different systems to do those things. We have the perfect word of God, but it is not perfectly translated. And one of the problems is that there's no one around today to translate it who lived back then when the language was used. It evolved over a long time, and meanings changed over a long period.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, there's not as many copies of this text as there is of many others. And I found that interesting, that I did not know until I got into it. Keith, did you have your hand?
I believe the sources that you referred to said that they came from a Greek translations. I've got a side note of mine that says in the Hebrew, 30 and 40 out of verse 1 were not there, were omitted. And so it could be a translation off of languages and just assumptions there.
Yeah. Yes, Jack?
Well, with that, no, for the New American Standard, whatever's in italics, that's what the translator is adding. So yeah, to that, 30 and 40 in mine are both italicized. But one other thing I thought of, what he said earlier, if you look at James 5, where it talks about Elijah, he prayed that it wouldn't rain for, what does it say? Prayer said that it would not rain. Then verse 18, it says that he prayed again. Back to 17. Prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain for on earth for 3 years and 6 months. But then if you go to 1 Kings 18, it says, now it happened after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year. So, you know, it doesn't, both accounts don't exactly say the same verbiage, but we can surmise, okay, well, if it's in the third year, it's, you know, James specifies later on.
Yeah. And I think my quotes didn't italicize that, but the NAS also has the 30 and 40 noted as being added. Brent, were you?
My mind, I didn't raise my hand, but I was thinking.
Well, your hand was doing this.
Was it? Sorry. Well, you know, I don't know that this matters that much, but you know the verses right after that. Saul chose for himself 3,000 men of Israel exactly, of which 2,000 exactly were with Saul and 1,000 exactly with Jonathan. And then a little farther down, they had 30,000 chariots exactly and 6,000 horsemen exactly. Yeah. You know, probably rounded.
Yeah, no, I think that's very valid. All right, what is the date of this occurring? Does anybody have any chronological dates? And I will tell you that they are vast, the experts on this one. But do we have any idea, just a ballpark, where we're at in the timeline? So 1100, I think it's the next one up here. So King Saul, it shows from 51 to 11. David was 11 through 971. And got the weird one on that one. So Samuel born, it's interesting, they must have seen a birth certificate in 1120. David becomes king in 1011. Saul becomes king in 1051. And Solomon does in 971. This one is the one that gives 15 years. So if you'll look down toward the bottom, dead center. So it says Saul born 1082, and then Jonathan born 1067. 15 years. So maybe they could have been full-size fighting men at age 15, but I just struggle. I think about, you know, when David came and he couldn't handle the king's armor, when Saul gave him to go fight Goliath, he was small. Now, I had always grown up picturing, you know, Daniel being a little boy and all the things that Daniel went through, and he was a grown man in many of the trials that he went through. But we know David was small. He couldn't handle the armor, even though he had already killed a lion and a bear. But this guy, and, you know, just puts it out there that Saul was 15 when Jonathan was born. So this is his. In 1082, Saul is born. Jonathan is likely born around 1067. My calculations, that's 15 years. He's Saul's oldest son. It's important to note that Jonathan was old enough to lead the defeat of the Philistines at Geba, and then single-handedly defeating them at Michmash with his arm bearer. So Saul was only 30-year-old when he became king, yet he had a son old enough to lead a battle against the Philistines. He would have to at least be 15 years old, but not much older than that, given Saul is 30 when Jonathan defeats the Philistines. This would mean that Saul was 15 when he became the father of Jonathan, and Jonathan was 15 when Saul became king. So David was about 15 when he killed Goliath, okay? If you go with that thinking, so David couldn't handle the armor of the king, but Jonathan could. So, don't know. And Jonathan was definitely taller than everybody. He stood out in the crowd, but just interesting. Okay, that's enough of that. Okay, so back to the verses. Let's go ahead and go through some of that. Any comments before we get into it? All right. Get caught up with my notes here. So the second verse, since we took all that time, we took 22 minutes on one verse. Saul chose for himself 3,000 men of Israel, of which 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in the hill country of Bethel, while 1,000 were with Jonathan at Gibeah of Benjamin. He sent the rest of the way to his people. Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was at Geba, and the Philistines heard it, and Saul blew his trumpet throughout the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." So, going to what Brent talked about, we are giving specific numbers, and I don't think it would shake any of us to think that, okay, there was, you know, 3,025 men, and 2,050 were with Saul, and 950 were with Jonathan. That also brings up the point, 1,000 men are going to be following a 15-year-old boy, to me is just a little bit of a stretch. Mark?
Yeah, to go along with what you were saying before, we don't, unless I'm just missing it, we don't have anything here in the scriptures that says verse 2 immediately starts when Saul was 30.
Right.
It seems to me like verse 1 is just a summary saying, Saul started here and reigned this long, and now here's a battle that happened somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah.
No, I think that's very good point. Okay, all of Israel heard that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines and also that Israel had become odious to the Philistines. The people were then summoned to Saul at Gilgal. So once again, we have the numbers of what the Philistines had assembled. 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people like the sand of the seashore. I cannot imagine, I mean, we're talking up there, they had 6,000 men. We're about to find out that they had no weaponry, and they're facing 30,000 chariots. That alone is like a tank in hand-to-hand combat. 6,000 horsemen were like two or three men in combat. And yet, then they had all these soldiers. They were like the shore, the sand on the shore. And my translation in verse 6 says, the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were hard-pressed. And the people hid themselves in caves and thickets and cliffs and cellars and in pits. So we don't know how many foot soldiers they had, but just the overwhelming masses would be very intimidating, even though they had God on their side. But remember, this is the people that just chose a king over Samuel. So their faith was definitely not where it should have been. Some of the Hebrews crossed the Jordan into the land of Gad and Gilead, but as for Saul, he was still at Gilgal, and all the people following him were trembling. He waited 7 days according to the appointed time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. Have you ever been in a situation to where you know that you need to be patient, and you're not patient, and it usually gets you in trouble? There's a lot of smiles in this audience talking about that. I think we can all relate to that. And we're not talking that, you know, you're just waiting to do your driver's license, and you're being impatient about it. Maybe you're mistreating people because you want your driver's license. We're talking about life and death, overwhelming odds. And your little army that's with you, your 600 men are starting to scatter because they see we are overwhelmed. We cannot handle this. And what does God tell him? Through Samuel, you're going to wait 7 days. And those would have been very, very, very long days. I've shared with y'all, I needed lots of spankings growing up. And just the anticipation of Dad coming home was worse than the spanking. And can you imagine being told 7 days? And every day you wake up and you do a head count, you've lost more guys. And you go to bed, you're probably not eating very good. You wake up the next morning, you lost more guys. Yeah, you can relate with that. This is not a small issue. This is life and death. This is war. And this little group of people that he had with him, that he thought, okay, we're going to go into battle. Samuel's going to come bless us. He's going to offer the peace offering and the burnt offering. We're going to have the power of God with our 600 men. We're going to take care of these Philistines. And every morning, there's fewer people that he can see. And then Saul says, verse 9, bring to me the burnt offering and the peace offering. And he offered the burnt offering. I think our society, we really struggle with the concept of these burnt offerings and sacrifices and everything that goes into it. And we've just got to immerse ourselves in the time that this was written. And there were people designated to do these things. And we have to be patient. Is there things in our lives that constantly try our patience? Is our bodies breaking down? Is our loved ones' bodies breaking down? And it's not fair. And we have to be patient. David does a really good job stressing to us that this is not heaven, that everything breaks down and falls apart here. But we need to be patient with God, because he is patient with us. As soon as he finished the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. How many of us, especially growing up, we did something really dumb, and mom or dad or the babysitter rounded the corner right when we did it, and, you know, then it's, I mean, there's no denying, I just did it. I just got caught doing it. But it's the king of the children of Israel got caught doing something really silly. Samuel said, what have you done? Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattering from me and that you did not come within the appointed days. And that's kind of a discussion on the days that we just had, isn't it? He said 7 days. It wasn't seven. On the seventh day at 12:01 a.m., I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there on the seventh day. You did not come at the appointed days, and the Philistines were assembling at Michmash. Therefore, I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not asked the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself and offered burnt offering. As Flip Wilson used to say, the devil made me do it. I forced myself. We don't see that it took him very much to turn to his people and say, bring me the offering. Verse 13, Samuel said to Saul, you have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him ruler over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. So a lot of discussion, and one that I did not spend a lot of time following, was that accurate that God would have established his kingdom forever? And it's a discussion that, it's a fun discussion to have of God knowing the future, does it affect the present? And God is a perfect God. He's not human. And he acts perfect in every situation. And we are told that he ruined his chance of having his kingdom established forever. And it is taken away, and that's somebody else's class. So, giving the time frame of some of the things we looked at, is David a man when it is told that this is going to happen?
Yeah. I don't know when this is, but...
Oh, no, that guy said it was whatever it was. 1052. Yeah, you're exactly right, Wyatt. We don't know. So God is telling the king of the children of Israel that God has chosen a man that's a sought out for himself a man after his own heart. And he may not have even been born yet. And to me, that's kind of a neat concept of how God sees us here below. Then Samuel arose and went from Gilgal to Gibeah of Benjamin. Saul numbered the people who were present with him, about 600 men. Now Saul and his son Jonathan and the people who were present with them were staying at Gibeah of Benjamin, while the Philistines camped at Michmash. And the raiders came from the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned toward Ophrah, the other to Shual, and another company toward Beth Horon, and another company turned toward the border which overlooks the valley of Zibeon, toward the wilderness. Now, no blacksmith could be found in all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said otherwise, the Hebrews will make swords or spears. So all Israel went down to the Philistines, each to sharpen his plowshare, his mattocks, his axe, and his hoe. The charge was a 2/3 of shekel for the plowshare, mattocks, and the forks, and the axes, and to fix the holes. So it came about on the day of battle that neither sword nor spear was found in the hands of any of the people who were with Saul and Jonathan, but they were found with Saul and his son Jonathan. Sounds like pretty good ways of controlling your enemy. Maybe a situation that the United States found themselves in a few years ago, not making our own chips. And nobody wants chips being built in their backyard, but we kind of got exposed. It was amazing how many guys at work had new trucks and were missing chips of some of the neat features in their trucks. And there may be some in here that had that same situation. But the Philistines took all the blacksmiths, apparently back with them. So Israel couldn't make any weaponry. To me, you think about you're facing these 40,000 people that we know about besides the ones that are numbered more than the sand. And you just have wooden weapons against people with chariots and with swords and with spears. It took a lot of courage for them to be out there when the odds and the weaponry was so lopsided. Now the day came, chapter 14, that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to his young man who was carrying his armor, the only armor besides Saul's, "Come and let us cross over to the Philistines' garrison on the other side." But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying on the outskirts at Gibeah under the pomegranate tree, which is in Migron. And the people who were with him were about 600 men. And Ahijah, the son of Atib, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the priest of the Lord at Shiloh, was wearing an ephod. What is an ephod? What the priest wore. Oh, okay. It's what it is. And it's like a big, well, it's like my youngest daughter's husband when he was over in Iraq and the chaplain, they would take turns. And Cody actually got to preach and do classes and things like that. So when he left, he gave him the, what's it called? The chaplain thing that the military guys wore. I don't think Cody's ever worn it. But he was awarded it. It was a nice gesture that he was supposedly standing up for the Word of God. So anyway, an ephod was a big collar thing that would drape around their necks, and it was decorated. But it showed them that they were the man of God in the group. Between the passes, verse 4, by which Jonathan sought to cross over to the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp crag on one side and sharp crag on the other side. And I'm assuming that's cliffs, rocky cliffs. Verse 6, then Jonathan said to the young man who was carrying his armor, come and let us cross over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few. And his armor bearer said to him, do all that is in your heart. Turn yourself, and here I am with you according to your desire. What a loyal guy. That me and this guy, we're going to go across and fight the enemy. Jonathan said, behold, we will cross over to the men and reveal ourselves to them. If they say to us, wait until we come to you, then we will stand in our place and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, then we will go up. For the Lord has given them into our hands, and this shall be the sign to us. Does that remind you of somebody in maybe the desert spying out the promised land? Maybe Joshua and Caleb, they're like, let's go. We can take these guys. And here these two are just all on their own. And I didn't realize how late the time was. So they go, and somewhere it says 20 men. There it is, verse 14. That first slaughter, which Jonathan and his armor bearer made, was about 20 men. So these two guys, the armor bearer and Jonathan, both took out 20 of the enemy. Yes?
David, when he fights Goliath.
Oh, yeah.
And it's no wonder that Jonathan resonated with Jonathan. He was willing to go and do when everybody else was scared, nobody was going out to fight, he just went. And he just... Without us being told that he had any direct revelation from God that it was going to go well, he just trusted that it would because he was fighting the fight that God wanted him to fight.
He had the faith, just like David with the lion and the bear. He had the faith. Most of us would be going the other direction. Okay, so real quick, because I blew it on time. They go back, they go into the forest. There is honey on the ground. Jonathan reaches out with his staff. He dips it in the honey, and he eats it. He doesn't realize that the soldiers were commanded by Saul to take an oath that you will not eat anything this day, that they are going to fight morning to night without eating anything. Jonathan ate the honey. He was refreshed, and then they tell him, you don't know about the oath. And then, okay, so they understand that. A little bit later, there is Saul wants to go and fight the Philistines, and the man of God tells him that we need to go before the Lord, and he waits. He obeys the man of the Lord, and God never responds to him. So Saul realizes there is sin in the camp. So Saul says one of those ridiculous things, that whoever is guilty of this sin, even if it's my son, should be put to death. So they separate Saul and Jonathan from the children of Israel. They cast lots, and it lands on Jonathan and Saul. And then they cast lots between Jonathan and Saul, and it lands on Jonathan. And Jonathan says what? Once again, his courage. I need to die. He doesn't hesitate. He says, I violated the oath of the king. I need to die. Saul, there's still character left in Saul because he says, do to me whatever you do to him. Because he said something really silly. So we're very early on into his reign. There's glimpses of a really good guy in Saul. And then human characteristics just coming out and making some really dumb mistakes. Any final comments? We got 1 minute. Joel?
I was thinking about how Saul responded to Samuel's rebuke in chapter 13. And contrasted that with David's rebuke from Nathan, the prophet, in 2 Samuel 12, and the reaction couldn't be more different. And it should be a study for us in how we react when confronted with the truth, not to make excuses, but to speak the truth. And it's no wonder why David so often asked God to make him a man of integrity in the Psalms, and we should want to be like that too.
And can you imagine thousands of years later, that people are reading, you're a man after God's own heart. Not a perfect man, but He was a loyal servant of God. All right, thank you all very much.